We're doing Ein Yaakov. We're on page Chafchet Amud Aleph in the standard editions. And we had learned the story of Sandala Mesumar, the different versions of the story of the sandal that had a nail. I didn't move the marker last week. But we had different versions of what happened in that cave, why they made a decree that people should not walk around with a sandal that has a nail. And we started the next piece, which described that when you wear shoes, we're on page 56, I'm sorry, when you wear shoes, put on the right shoe first and then the left shoe. And you take off the left and then the right. When you wash, you rinse your right and then your left. And so too when you anoint yourself. We said these are Kabbalistic concepts. I have no idea what any of this means. I just know that the rabbi said it, so I respect it. A person should anoint his head first and then the rest of his body. We're moving forward. We're in the middle of the page where it says Daf Samach Beis Amud Aleph. We're in the middle of page 56. That's Chafchet Amud Bet in the standard editions of Ein Yaakov. Harei Tfilin Dem Chupeo, and we discussed over here the response of the Noda Biyehuda, Rabbi Cheska Landau, where he writes that the word tefillin in Shas is actually the four parchment scrolls, or the one parchment scroll in the Shel Yad, and the leather is called a leather wrapping. We look at it all and we call it tefillin, but in fact, what the Noda Biyehuda explains over there is that tefillin is actually just the parchments, the scrolls, and the leather is called its wrapping, as we see here in Talmud. He is, in fact, arguing with the Beis Yosef. Over there, he was asked the question, if someone has tefillin, and they put gold around their tefillin, is that kosher or not? So in Shulchan Aruch it says, that's not kosher, because the Talmud says that if you wrapped your tefillin in gold, it's not kosher. Well, what the Noda Biyehuda explains in that responsa is that when the Talmud says you put tefillin in gold, it's not talking about taking our tefillin and putting gold on it. It's talking about taking the scrolls and putting gold around it, because the Noda Biyehuda proves that the word tefillin is the parchment scrolls without the leather encasing, the leather housing. So if the person had kosher tefillin, and then he put gold around that, then Noda Biyehuda says that the Talmud did not discuss when the Talmud said you put gold on your tefillin. We think gold on your tefillin means you take tefillin the way we see it, and you put gold on it. Noda Biyehuda says no. Tefillin is just the scrolls. But again, he's arguing with the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef understood, Rav Yosef Karo understood, that tefillin is the scrolls together with the leather housing. The way we look at tefillin, we call them tefillin. Okay, so the Talmud says like this, Harei tefillin dem chupeo. With tefillin, you have the scrolls wrapped in leather. Vitanya, and we have the following brisa. We have a Tanakh quote that was not incorporated into the Mishnah. That's why it's called birisa. Brisa comes from the word bira. Bira means external. Brisa means that which is external, the external Tanakh quote. It's not part of the Mishnah. Hanichnas the Beit HaKiseh. Someone enters a lavatory. Beit HaKiseh. So that's a respectful way, as Maimonides writes. Hebrew is called Lashon HaKodesh, because we don't have any direct terms for things that are defiled. If we want to talk about intimacy, we call it Tashmish HaMita, the use of the bed. We want to talk about the male organ, so we say the Bris Mila, the covenant. We want to talk about a person's seed, we say Yotzei Yerech Yaakov, Yotzei Yerech, those that were emitted from his thigh. It's not his thigh, it's the organ that's near the thigh. Yeah, but we don't speak directly. We have euphemisms. So too, when we want to speak about a toilet, we don't have a toilet in Hebrew. We talk about Beit HaKiseh, the house with the seat. It has a specific seat, but we call it a Beit HaKiseh, right? Hanichnas the Beit HaKiseh, one who walks into the house with a seat, which is another way of saying a lavatory. Choletz tefillin b'richuch dal damot v'nichnas. You take off your tefillin 4 footsteps away. 4 amos, the Talmud in Tractate Erevin says, is the equivalent of 4 footsteps. When you want to factor how much is 2,000 amos that you're allowed to walk outside the city domain on Shabbat, it says you can calculate 2,000 footsteps. From there we understand that 4 amos is 4 footsteps. So you take off your tefillin 4 footsteps away, v'nichnas, and then you enter. Answers the Talmud, hatam mishum shin. Over there we have to be careful. Why are the tefillin prohibited from entering the bathroom? Even though the Torah scrolls and tefillin are wrapped, because you have the shin that's engraved in the tefillin. And we described last week, we described that the shin is part of Shakai, Hashem's name. And even though the shin is like squeezed out of the leather, that's called a part of God's name. Amar Abaye, Abaye taught, Shin shel tefillin halacha l'Moshe Misinai, the shin of the tefillin is halacha l'Moshe Misinai. And we discussed last week about the knot, Amar Abaye dalet shel tefillin halacha l'Moshe Misinai, Abaye taught the dalet of the tefillin, the straps. We described last week that the knot together with the straps emanating from it makes a right angle. And a right angle in halacha, two lines that form a right angle equals a dalet. We add a little leg at the end, but technically a dalet is just a right angle. Two lines that form a right angle. V'amar Abaye, Abaye taught, Yud shel tefillin halacha l'Moshe Misinai, the Yud of the tefillin are also halacha l'Moshe Misinai. What do the words halacha l'Moshe Misinai mean? It means this is a halacha that we have on tradition from Moshe from Sinai, and it is a tradition from Moshe from Sinai that comes from Sinai specifically. Meaning there are things that Moshe taught or things that Moshe instituted that are rabbinic. We know Moshe taught the Torah. That's one thing. Then we know Moshe had a court and he instituted certain things like Torah reading. We read the Torah on Shabbos. We read the Torah on holidays. That's a rabbinic institution of Moshe's court. So certain things Moshe instituted that are rabbinic. Then you have things that Moshe gave us on tradition from Sinai. He says, God told me this at Sinai. How to remake tefillin, that the straps should be black. That you should have the shin squeezed out, right? We squeeze the hide to make three lines that come, that fuse on the bottom to make the shape of a shin. So that's all halacha l'Moshe Misinai, tradition from Moshe from Sinai. So halacha l'Moshe Misinai is the middle ground between rabbinic and biblical. You have the biblical Torah law that's written. You have the rabbinic that's not written. The rabbis instituted it. Then you have something in the middle. It's an oral tradition, but it comes from Sinai, and it has a different weight. To the point where the Talmud will sometimes question, if I have a halacha l'Moshe Misinai about something, why would the Torah bother writing it? There's a clear indication that halacha l'Moshe Misinai has the gravity almost like something biblical. Because you see, the Talmud questions, why is it in Torah if it's a halacha l'Moshe Misinai? So that's why there's a big discussion in halacha. We know on biblical things, when in doubt, you have to be stringent. On rabbinic things, when in doubt, you could be lenient. What about halacha l'Moshe Misinai? So that's that middle ground, halacha l'Moshe Misinai, right? And so it's going to have, in certain aspects, it's going to be like biblical law. In certain aspects, it's going to be like rabbinic law. Who was Abaye? Who was Abaye? Gentlemen, what do we know about Abaye?
He's one of the rabbis of the Talmud.
Okay, he was a rabbi of the Talmudic period, written in Shas. There you can't find a page of Talmud where Abaye doesn't appear. What generation is Abaye? Who was his Rebbe? His Rebbe was Rabba. Okay, we have Rabba and Rav Yosef. His Rebbe was primarily Rav Yosef. The two giants of the time, Rabba and Rav Yosef. So Abaye was orphaned as a child. When his mother became pregnant, his father died. And at childbirth, his mother died. And so Abaye was brought up by his uncle, Rabba Bar Nachmani, and he was named Nachmani. Okay, so Abaye's real name is Nachmani. But his uncle, Rabba Bar Nachmani, didn't want to call him Nachmani, because Rabba's own father was called Nachmani. So he didn't want to call this orphan child who he was bringing up Nachmani, so he gave him a nickname. He called him Abaye. You have my father's name. Abaye, like Abba. Abba in Aramaic means father. Abaye is also an acronym. The verse says, Asher Becha Yerucham Yatom. The orphan finds compassion in you, Hashem. So that's also inferred by the name Abaye. Abaye will sometimes say in Talmud, Amera li em. My mother taught me. He never spoke to his mother. He was referencing his stepmother. And the Talmud says that one who brings up a child, it's as though they gave birth to that child. So Abaye says very often in Talmud, he says, Amiraliyeh, my mother taught me. It's not his biological mother. Okay, we move on. The verse says in the prophet Amos, Reshit shemanim yimshachu, they anoint themselves with the best of oils. Amar v'yudah amar Shmuel, Rav Yehuda bar Yecheskel said in the name of Shmuel, guys, what do we remember about Shmuel? Who is Shmuel? What generation is he? He is the first generation of Amoraim. He was a direct disciple of Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. He was a top astronomer. He was a top doctor. Shmuel and Rav were that first generation. Rav, Shmuel, Rabbi Yochanan, they were the first generations of Amoraim. So Shmuel was actually Rebbe's doctor. The Talmud said Rebbe was once sick. He had a terrible eye infection. Shmuel came and gave him medication. And Rebbe said, "No, my eye hurts too badly. I can't put that medication on my eye." So Shmuel said, "Okay, so put it on your pillow. When you lie down at night, it'll seep into your eye." And Rebbe said, "No, my eye is in such pain, I can't put that on my pillow." So Shmuel said, "Fine, put it under your pillow. It'll seep through the pillow into your eye." Obviously, it was something very sharp that it could seep through the pillow. And that's why Rebbe said he couldn't dab it on the eye. And Shmuel cured him. Rebbe said, "I want to give you smicha. You know Torah so well. Let me give you ordination as a rabbi." Shmuel said, "No, I was given a glance at that book that was shown to Adam, in which it says who would have which positions of leadership throughout all of time. And I saw what it says there. It says, Shmuel Yarchina, Shmuel the astronomer." Yarchina comes from which word? Yareach, means moon. Shmuel the astronomer will be Rebbe's doctor, it says. That part of authority I'll have. I'll be able to tell you what to do medically, but he'll never be able to get smicha. And every time Rebbe tried to convene a court to give him rabbinic ordination, something came up and it didn't work. And then Rebbe passed away, and Shmuel never got rabbinic ordination from Rebbe. But nonetheless, Shmuel was a great rabbi, and in halacha we have a rule that when Rav and Shmuel disagree, halacha kerav beisurei, in matters that involve prohibitions, the halacha is like Rav, halacha kishmuel bemamonot. On monetary matters, we will rule like Shmuel. So whenever there's an argument between Rav and Shmuel, we ask ourselves, is this monetary or is this prohibitive? What are they talking about? Sometimes it's not clear. Some matters involve both. So the rule is, the halacha is like Shmuel on monetary matters. So back to our piece of Ein Yaakov. The verse says, Reshit Shmanim Yimshachu, they anoint themselves of the best oils. Amar v'yudah mar Shmuel ze palyaton. That's an oil that's called palyaton. Mativ Rav Yosef, sir, Rav Yosef asked about that. Afal palyaton gazar Rav Yehuda ben Baba velo hodulo. Rav Yehuda ben Baba, one of the things he decreed was that after the destruction of the temple, they would not anoint themselves with palyaton. Who was Rav Yehuda ben Baba? Rav Yehuda ben Baba was a rabbi in the period of the destruction of the temple. And when the Romans made a decree that no one could give smicha, no one could give over the tradition and give ordination, Rabbi Yehuda ben, they said, anyone who gives rabbinic ordination will be killed. And the city that's closest to him will also be wiped out. So Rabbi Yehuda went between the city of Usha and Shafram, I think. It says he went between two huge cities. And in between those two cities, he brought five students and he gave them rabbinic ordination. And the Romans heard of it. I guess the rabbinic ordination involved some kind of procession which made a ruckus, so the Romans heard of it. So a huge army of Romans came, and he told his five students, "You guys run, I'm going to stand here, and they won't be able to pass me. I'll stop them, you run." And it says they came, and he said, "I will be ke'evin she'en la hofchim. I will be like a stone that's so big that no one can overturn it." And so the Talmud says Rabbi Yehuda ben Baba stood there, and the Romans came and they couldn't pass him, and they started shooting at him. And it says over 200 arrows went through him till he became like a sieve. There was holes through him, they pierced holes through him as though he were a sieve, as though he were a filter. And they pierced him, but he wouldn't budge. He stood his ground and he wouldn't let them pass until he passed away. But he stood his ground and his five students ran away, and because of his dedication, the tradition wasn't severed. We continued having smicha. He gave ordination to five students. So that's Rabbi Yehuda ben Baba. So after the destruction of the temple, Rabbi Yehuda ben Baba, there was a big discussion among the rabbis. What should we do? The temple's been destroyed. So different people took on different things. Some people said, "We won't drink wine, the temple's been destroyed." And the rabbi said, "You can't do that." People said, "Why not? How could we drink wine? They used to libate wine on the altar. We're going to drink wine?" So the rabbi said, "Okay, then don't eat bread, because bread was also offered in the temple." They said, "Oh no, you're right, we won't eat bread. And don't eat meat, because meat was also offered in the temple." "Oh no, so we won't eat meat." "Then don't drink water, because water was also libated on Sukkot." So the people said, okay, we give up. What do you mean? What should we do? They said, we're going to make institutions, and that's how you will commemorate the destruction, but it's got to be balanced. You can't just come out and say, we won't do things because the temple's being destroyed. There's a balance to it. So there was a discussion among the rabbis what they would prohibit. Okay, so what did they prohibit? What's quoted in halacha? One thing they said is when you paint your house, when you put even when you put white plaster on your house, so opposite the doorway, you leave an amma by an amma that's not plastered, that everyone who walks into the house sees you didn't finish your job. And that commemorates the destruction of the temple. The next thing they said is when a woman puts on her jewelry, she shouldn't put every form of jewelry on, she leaves one thing off. When you set the table, you leave one thing off. There used to be a custom, I've never seen people do it today, that you'd set a place for someone where no one would sit. And that would be to commemorate the temple. Never seen anyone do that. The closest thing we do to that is the cup of Elio, the cup of Elijah at the Seder. But I haven't seen anyone do that one. It says when a bride goes to her wedding, she may not wear a gold crown. That's a way of commemorating. At your chuppah, you should ask that they bring ash. The custom is that a chatan at his chuppah takes some ash and puts some ash on his forehead where he would ordinarily wear his tefillin. Because that's a part of commemorating the destruction of the temple. We break a glass under the chuppah. We remember that our happiness is not complete. We don't have the temple. So there were certain things that they instituted. You're not supposed to wake up or go to sleep to the sound of music. That you're not supposed to sit at a bar and enjoy drinking together with music. Unless, of course, it's a simcha. When it's a couple getting married, it's a simcha of a mitzvah. There we play music. There are those who are of the opinion that you're not allowed to listen to music other than when there's a mitzvah. You listen to music at a wedding, you listen to, etc. We don't have that custom today. But there is it's a very strong opinion in halacha that you're not supposed to listen to music on a day-to-day basis. Okay, so for us, music's become a part of our life. for many people, if they would try to do that, they'd be depressed, so they shouldn't do that. But there is such an opinion. So even though the rabbis limited it, but they did give it a definition, an expression, where we show that our life is incomplete because we don't have a temple. So Rabbi Yehuda bin Baba also forbade the oil of Paliaton. That was part of what he said we should do to commemorate the temple's destruction. Ve'lo hodulo. And the rabbis did not agree with him. Now, you want to say that the verse Reishit Shmanim Yimshachu is talking about the oil of Paliaton? Well, if that's so, then why wouldn't the rabbis agree with him? We assume that the oil of Paliaton has practical usages. But if that's the oil the prophet was talking about, that people would not heed the warnings of the prophet, they'd sit around anointing themselves with the finest of oils, well then what's wrong with what Rabbi Yehuda ben Baba tried to say? That you shouldn't use it since the temple's been destroyed. So then why didn't they agree? Amale Abaye, Abaye said to his Rebbe, Rav Yosef. Remember, Abaye's Rebbe was Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef, who was Rav Yosef? Rav Yosef was blind. Rav Yosef remembered tremendous amounts of Talmud by heart, and he was the chief rabbi. Blind, but he was the chief rabbi. So Abaye, his disciple, said, V'litamech, going with your logic, ha'dechtiv ha'shutim mizrkeyayin. They were drinking wine, and they'd have these special trumpets where they'd blow out the wine, and they'd make streams. So maybe we shouldn't drink wine either. So we're short on time. We're going to have to pause here. And we're in the middle of the question, what should be prohibited since the temple's destruction?